Every Woman is a feminist show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of humanity and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group. And every woman needs to work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated. Today, we're missing Ebony and Amy, and we have in the studio with us Donna Wolf, who's going to participate in our interview. And our guest today is Rita Marie Johnson. Rita Marie, are you on the air with us?
Yes, I am.
Great. Great. This is excellent. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about Rita Marie. She had, when she was in high school, she had the biggest dimples you ever saw. And I have a picture of her in a chef's hat at the Dryden drugstore that is as cute as can be, or I used to have it. I don't know if I can locate that or not. So I've known Rita Marie for quite some time, and she has lived in Costa Rica. She's a Unity minister, and she's an author of a book, and we'll talk with her about that. And she has I don't know if you've developed this all on your own. We'll have to hear about the connection practice, Rita Marie. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, all my life I was searching for a way to be peace. You know, I always wanted to be a peacemaker, and yet I realized that I sometimes wasn't myself, that I wasn't always able to walk my talk. And it wasn't really about being perfect, but at least being better. And so in searching for a way to actually embody peace, to model peace, I looked at social-emotional learning methods. And I found the Institute of Heart Math, which taught me a method called heart-brain coherence. And that is a method that immediately reduces stress, helps our impulse control, helps us truly to be peace, to be more insightful, to just be able to show up as our best self. And then I also discovered nonviolent communication, which was created by Dr. Marshall Rosenberg. And with that method, I learned how to really tune into my inner life by naming my feelings and my needs and be able to guess what somebody else might be feeling and needing. And by enlarging my feelings and needs vocabulary and learning how to stay connected to myself and others, then I was also able to embody peace more consistently. So the aha for me was in combining these two. I actually went to a nonviolent communication training with Marshall Rosenberg in Puerto Rico. And when I was first learning nonviolent communication, it was kind of challenging to learn this new language. And so I already knew heart math, and I decided to use heart-brain coherence in order to calm myself down and make it easier to learn this new language. So that was the first time I combined these two methodologies. And then when I got home and I thought about it, actually I was laying on the couch, and all of a sudden it dawned on me that there was this incredible synergy between the empathy that I was experiencing with nonviolent communication and connecting with my feelings and needs, and with the coherence and the insight that I experienced with heart math. So by combining empathy and insight, I was able to start using what I now call the connection practice, which is this combination. It's really a synergistic combination of empathy and insight that we can use really to process anything that comes along in life, whether it's a challenge or a celebration. It actually helps us to experience our joy more deeply, get more juice out of the happy moments, as well as to creatively and peacefully resolve challenges in our lives.
I have a question for Rita. Rita, this is Donna. I'm wondering, is this connection practice that's ancient, human memory? Is it in us naturally? Have we done something in our society to forget it?
That's a great question, Donna. You know, I always believe that if human beings knew better, they would do better. And when you ask whether this is something ancient within us, something innate within us, yes. I absolutely agree that this is something that's always been there. Our empathy and our insight are these great treasures within our hearts. And yet, what we haven't known how to do, and certainly haven't known how to teach, is how to reliably access our empathy and our insight. We haven't known the how to. And it seems to me that, you know, as we evolve as human beings, in some ways, you know, we have evolved in consciousness, and there's a lot to be hopeful about in our time. But as we all are aware, there's also tremendous symptoms of disconnection everywhere. And in my view, it's simply because we haven't been taught the how-to of connection. Yes, it's innate, but now not only do we know it intuitively, the problem is when we know something intuitively, we don't always know how to access it when we need it most. And so what we have now is the science that has helped us be completely clear on how we can reliably access our empathy and our insight, essentially at will. That's what we haven't known. And so to me, the science is such a gift in our time to be able to get the clarity that we've needed on the how-to, and then really being able to combine both empathy and insight. You know, for me, empathy is the great connector. It connects me to myself, self-empathy, and it connects me to others empathically. But we also need the insight for us to be able to see creative answers to moving forward. Just being empathetic is not enough. Actually, empathy without insight can often dip into misery. If we are just empathetic to somebody, sometimes we get stuck in the feeling part of empathy and we get drained. So we need insight to lift it up, to show empathy the way to now move forward. But on the other hand, insight also needs empathy because, you know, we might all know people who say, oh, I'm very intuitive, you know, I'm actually psychic. And sometimes there can be a little arrogance in that. Insight needs empathy to keep it humble. So these two, empathy and insight, are like soulmates. They really need each other in order to have this inner equanimity that is so important in being our best selves.
So how do we, at will, ignite this and unite our empathy and our insight? What is the science of doing that at will?
All right. Well, in this practice, the connection practice, let's say we have a challenge. You know, let's say we're in conflict with someone. So the first thing that we do is that we name our feelings. In naming our feelings, what happens is that we're able to release the charge on the amygdala of the brain. The amygdala is what people most commonly think of as the fight and flight response. You know, that's the part of our brain that gets triggered when something doesn't meet our needs. But the moment that we're able to name the feeling, research shows us that in naming the feeling, the charge on the amygdala begins to dissipate. It's almost as if the amygdala is screaming at us, you have an unmet need, you have an unmet need, and then we have all these negative feelings. But the moment we name those feelings, it's as if the amygdala feels heard. Okay, you've heard me now, I don't need to scream at you anymore. And so that's the first step, is naming feelings, or if we're working with another person, what we're doing is guessing their feelings. And even guessing the feelings of another person helps to take the charge off our own amygdala. In other words, if I'm triggered by something, I've become angry, and the other person is angry too, just by guessing that this person is angry or upset helps me to release the charge on my amygdala. And then the second step is about naming our needs, being able to go underneath the feeling, because the feeling is just like a little red flag that we've had a perception of an unmet need. So we have to go under the feeling and say, what is that unmet need that I perceived? Let's say that, you know, I'm feeling upset because I had it was a need for respect. And the moment that I name that need for respect, what happens is that the part of my brain that has to do with compassion is triggered. Or you could say empathy. The part of my brain that has to do with empathy is ignited by naming the need or guessing the need of another person. When I see that another person is having negative feelings or is in a difficult situation, and if I guess what they're needing, let's say I'm guessing that maybe they need emotional safety, or maybe they need consideration, whatever the need is that I guess, when I do that, I'm activating the part of my brain that has to do with empathy and compassion. And so it causes my heart to open.
So, Rita Marie, can you hold that thought? And I'm just trying to digest this and come up with an example to give you to see how it might work for me. But right now we need to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Hang on.
All right.
You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Every Woman. Sharon Lockhart is here in studio. I'm her engineer today, Donna Wolf. And our guest on the phone is Rita Marie Johnson from the Rasher Foundation. Stay with us. We'll be back after these messages.
KKFI would like to sincerely thank you for another amazing year as Kansas City's community radio station. Your support allows us to educate, to entertain, and to help make a difference in our community. We look forward to continuing this great privilege throughout 2017. From all of us at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Happy New Year.
On Sunday, January 15th, from 3 to 5 p.m., the Olathe Human Relations Commission and the Olathe Public Schools presents the Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration, A Purpose Greater Than Myself. That's the Olathe Conference Center at Embassy Suites, 10401 South Ridgeview Road, Olathe, Kansas. That's Sunday, January 15th. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And we're back with Rita Marie Johnson of the Rasher Foundation, and she's talking to us about the connection practice. And for me, I know she knows this because I've talked to her about it, that it's hard for me to give up my resentments. It's hard for me to even imagine doing this. I admit that. Mm-hmm. I'm not proud of it. But it is.
I think you're pretty regular, Sharon.
Oh, she says I'm normal. Oh,
I've got issues, too.
Well, you know, Sharon, that's normal because that's what we were all brought up with, right? That that established the norm, right, is that nobody taught us another way. And so, you know, that's just, like I said, if we all knew better, we'd all do better. And I know that... you know, this is something that's changed me completely. I really am so different now that I'm practicing this. I really have a deeper confidence, and I just feel like in any situation that I'm going to be calmer. So it's really changed me, and it's just really a matter of practice. It's really just knowing what to do and practicing it often enough so that it works for you. Let me give you an example. So one day I was... on an airplane, and I was landing in Miami. And so, you know, when the plane gets on the ground, everybody stands up and wants to get at their luggage to get ready to get off. So I was standing there in the aisle, and this young man behind me comes pushing through. I mean, he just pushed me out of the way and was, you know, just headed down the aisle no matter what. And so, you know, I was triggered by that behavior. I really had some negative emotions coming up. So, you know, I was just standing there waiting to get off the plane, so I had plenty of time to practice self-empathy. So I named my feelings. I was really feeling annoyed, irritated, and my needs. I really was needing some respect and just some basic communication. And so just by doing that little step, you know, I found that the charge was dissipated, that it was okay. You know, obviously he was in a hurry about something, and I was just able to let my own negative feelings go. And then I just went on to get off the plane. Well, as it turns out, I ended up next to this young man in the customs line because I'd been flying from Costa Rica. So I'm next to him in the customs line, and he still looks so agitated, like he just can't hardly wait, like he wants to push his way through the customs line, but of course that's not possible. Anyway, so, you know, I just decided to give him some empathy, and I just said, are you feeling stressed because you need to get somewhere quickly? And he looked at me, and he said, oh, I've been so rude, haven't I? He said, I'm sorry. He said, my wife is about to have our baby any minute, and I just can't help myself. I just can't help myself from trying to go faster. Well, oh, gosh. You know, after hearing that, obviously, my heart opened. You know, this is where when we name needs, when we connect, you know, his need was efficiency. And I hadn't actually said efficiency, but I used words that communicated that. So anyway, then he and I really connected, and as we were standing there in line, and then we were ready to part, and he says, you know, you remind me so much of my mother.
Boy.
And, you know, it's just such immediate connection when I was able to give him empathy instead of just thinking that he was a jerk. And I'm so grateful that I had this practice to help me get there quickly, you see, to not hold on to that judgment of him any longer than necessary, to, you know, just get right down to what I was feeling and needing and what he was feeling and needing. And then we were so connected heart to heart. So that's just a little example. I could tell you, you know, I don't know how many stories, but I just did a counseling this afternoon with a couple that were having a lot of problems communicating. And we use feelings and needs cards, and with these cards, they have to pick up all the feelings that are related to the issue, and then they have to guess each other's needs. So, for example, the woman lays her feelings out on the table, and then the man had to guess what unmet needs were under those feelings. And after they did that, then we moved into the second step of the practice, which I'd like to explain now. And that is this heart-brain coherence that I mentioned. When we move into heart-brain coherence, which is achieved by three simple steps, you focus down in the heart, letting all of your energy drop down into the heart, and then you breathe deeply and rhythmically as if you're breathing down in the heart, and then you feel appreciation down in your heart for something that's easy for you, something that just makes your heart sing. Something that you can feel. You're not thinking about it. You're feeling it down in your heart. So with those three steps, what's going to happen is that your heart is going to become coherent. This is a scientific term. When you do this, these three steps, the heart moves into coherence. And then because the heart is the strongest moving part in our bodies, the heart has the power to pull the brain waves into coherence. So then what we have is heart-brain coherence. In other words, first you get the heart to be coherent, and then because the heartbeat is so strong, it's the strongest moving part in our bodies, it has the power to pull the brain waves into sync. So when we establish heart-brain coherence, then we're able to most easily access our intuition, our insights, our creativity for the answers that we need to move forward in life. And so with this couple that I counseled this afternoon, you know, after they'd guessed each other's feelings and needs, they were so much more connected heart to heart. They had so much greater understanding, and they uncovered a pattern that had developed when they were dating and that was getting in their way now in their marriage. And so the next step for them was to go into heart brain coherence. I guided them in these three steps, and they sat in this coherence. And then once they get into the heart brain coherence, their task was to ask inside, what do I need to know about this pattern in our marriage? And then listen inside for the answer and see what comes. So they both did the three steps, heart focus, heart breathing, heart feeling of appreciation. Then they asked themselves the question in their hearts, what do I need to know about this? They listened inside, and then they opened their eyes, and they both had an insight to share with the other that took them to a completely different place, took them to complete awareness of what had been getting in the way and what they needed to do to shift it.
I had a couple. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I had a couple of questions. One of them's left over from the previous segment, actually, when we were talking about naming our feelings and naming our needs and moving towards the step where we start working towards heart-brain coherence in this connection practice. But, you know, and the couple you just talked about, they were starting from a foundation of mutual love and mutual respect, it sounds like. It sounds like they wanted to achieve this, you know, symbiosis, this coherence. But we have these overarching problems in our society that I think in part are related to people not seeing the humanity in other people. My group is human, but that other group isn't quite as human, and so how can I anticipate their needs? I think we have in our tribes, we've decided not to have empathy, not to see the other group as human. So how could we ever achieve any kind of empathy for that other group if we don't even see the humanity in them? Is that?
Well, yes, absolutely. I think that's exactly right, that we have to really look at how we're seeing each other. And in this framework of the connection practice, we see all human beings as just trying to get their needs met. You know, we're all just trying to get our needs met, and we all use different strategies, though, to get those needs met. The needs that we have are universal. They're the same for all of us, you know, needs like support and honesty and to belong, acceptance, respect, cooperation. These are all universal needs that we share. However, where we get into conflict is the strategies for getting the needs met. We get attached to a certain strategy, and consequently, then we get into conflict. But we know from using the connection practice that, especially because of the insight piece, you see, when we move into heart-brain coherence and we're looking for an insight is what is beyond our intellectual assessment of the problem. You see, this is where, you know, you say, well, we've forgotten each other's humanity. Well, we get stuck on our own intellectual framework. You know, we've got the world figured out in our own way. And so we haven't been willing to get out of that box and look at a bigger picture and see what else might be there. But with heart-brain coherence and insight, it takes us into the, what I always say is, into the sky of all possibilities. And so we tend to open up, and we can become so much more insightful, empathetic, when we look at a bigger picture and not, and are willing to just say, well, maybe I can let go of this particular way that we have to get needs met. Maybe there's a multitude of ways. Maybe I can come together with another person and find a way that works for everybody. So that's why the intuition, the insight part of this is essential. Actually, people who teach mindfulness have been telling us this. You know, mindfulness is very valuable. We're so grateful that it is becoming widespread in our society. But mindfulness teachers tell us that the connection practice is giving them something that mindfulness doesn't, frankly. This is what they're telling us, that what has been missing for them in mindfulness is getting a creative answer. You know, it's one thing to be empathetic and understand we're all trying to get our needs met and be compassionate, but we also need those creative answers that move us forward. And so the connection practice has both.
So in this context, Rita, then what are bullies about? What are the needs that they're trying to get met? And what's up with
well,
that?
I can't say, because each bully is individual. But if I were to guess that in general, what bullies are trying to do is matter. They have a need to matter.
Okay.
And they're getting that need to matter met with a tragic strategy, is what we would say. Mm-hmm. They're using a tragic strategy to get their needs to matter met.
Wow.
And so this is why in, schools, when we work with kids in schools, we don't have the approach of, the bully's the bad guy. We just understand everybody's trying to get their needs met. And so we just help bullies learn how to get their needs met with strategies that enrich life.
Okay. And
I'd love to, there's another story I have about that that's
ahead,
quite
please.
Interesting. Well, one guidance counselor that we worked with was just on fire with the connection practice. She used it in every instance where she was a guidance counselor in her elementary school. She changed her whole practice there to be the connection practice. And one day she had a parent come in, a mother came in with her daughter, and the mother was indignant and said, my daughter is being bullied. And so, okay, so the guidance counselor starts doing the connection practice with her, with the little girl, guessing the little girl's feelings and needs, and she had the little girl guess the feelings and needs of the other person. Then she led the little girl into heart-brain coherence and asked the little girl to look for an insight. Now, this is an elementary age child, right? But she asked this little girl to ask for an insight. The little girl sat for a moment in coherence. She opened her eyes and she said, "The truth is, I'm the bully.
Wow.
I started it.
Wow.
I started it."
That's pretty amazing.
You see, what this does is it just takes that mask right off. It takes all of our defenses away very efficiently so that we get to the heart of things in ourselves and in connecting with others. We get to that heart-to-heart connection that's real.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. I wonder if anybody out there listening would like to call in and ask Rita Marie a question or make a comment. Our telephone line is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. And you have a teleconference coming up soon on the 21st of January.
That's right. Yes, we do. We offer these. Go ahead.
Is that open for anyone to call in?
It is. It's open for anyone to call in. And you can get information on that by going to our website, which is Rasur, that's R-A-S-U-R, Foundation. I'm sorry, I said it wrong. That used to be our address. It's Rasur International. We are a foundation, but our address for our international foundation is Rasur, R-A-S-U-R, international.org. So if you go there, you can get information on the free teleseminar that's coming up on January 21st, and it is free, open to everyone. It's just an introduction to the connection practice and also the opportunity to ask questions, just like you two have done, especially about your concern about our world right now. You know, as we look out on our world, we see all of this violence and, people are so polarized that it's very discouraging, disheartening. And so people throw up their hands and go, "What on earth can we do?" And we can do this. People that talk to me about their experience with the connection practice, they say, it isn't a cure-all, but it is a cure-a-lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we just could learn the basics of this practice of consistently getting to our own innate empathy and insight, it would shift so much that's going on in the world.
Well, I wish you could broadcast the seminar on the evening news or something. For
Well, believe me, I long to get our message out, you know, to a much broader audience. You know, I've been teaching this 12 years, and we do have a lot of followers and supporters, but you know, most mornings I wake up yearning to talk to the world, because I just see every day, just like this couple this afternoon, and I'd like to share another one that touched me recently. I had a young man come to me for counseling because he was concerned about a friend of his, a teenager, who was suicidal. Hmm. And so he was very concerned about this friend, and so I had him do his own feelings and needs, and then he guessed the feelings and needs of the friend that he was trying to help. And his main need, this young man's main need, was peace. He wanted to find some peace around how to help. And he felt like he was guessing the suicidal friend's main need was love. Hmm. And so the two main needs on the table were peace and love. And so then I led him into coherence, and he listened inside, asking himself what he needed to know. And after just a moment, he opened his eyes and he said, "A true investment." And I said, "What does that mean? What does that mean to you?" He said, "What I got is my friend is so disillusioned by the world right now. He's so disillusioned. Everything seems false. Everything seems like it's falling apart. What he needs to see from me a true investment in him, a true investment of love mm-hmm. that's solid." And, you know, it just took my breath away.
Yeah, that's pretty basic. That's a pretty basic foundation of nourishment, and that's love sort of affirms your reason for existence, doesn't it? I think it's some
mm-hmm.
in some
absolutely
yeah.
absolutely. And you know, I think this insight touched me so much, because I think that's what's so scary in our world right now, is that just like fake news, right? You know, we hear this fake news, it's hard to know what's real. It's hard to know what's true. And so when this young man's insight was a true investment, love that is absolutely true, you know, to me, that's it right there.
So regarding heart-brain coherence and the physical mm-hmm. steps that you go through, you describe to us focusing mm-hmm. down in your heart, breathing deeply, feeling an appreciation for something that's easy for you to appreciate. What does mm-hmm. that do to your body? What is the physicality mm-hmm. or physiology of that uh-huh. of those actions?
Sure. Well, what happens there is when the heart moves into this coherent state, the heart and brain begin communicating. You know, it's like the heart and brain are having a happy conversation, you could say. And the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems move into sync. And then we know from the research that when we are in a positive emotional state, what in the research they call positive affect, that we are more able to access insight. And they know this from differing brain activity patterns. There's a study called a brain mechanism for facilitation of insight by positive affect. And in that study, it showed that when we're in this positive feeling state, which is what we get into with heart-brain coherence, when we're in that state, then we have increased insight before and during the solving of a problem, which they can tell by watching the brain activity patterns.
I'm trying to think. Is there a way to prepare oneself? For example, if you know you're going into a meeting and there is likely to be conflict, can you prepare yourself prior to going into this meeting by putting yourself in this state? Or is it
absolutely
something?
Sharon. As a matter of fact, you're reminding me of an example. Years ago, I was working with a Costa Rican friend to get a bill passed in Costa Rica for a ministry for peace. We had initiated this bill from the Razor Foundation, and we had all but one congressman in favor of the bill. So my Costa Rican friend was going to go and meet with this man who was against the bill for a ministry for peace. So in preparing her for that meeting, I just reminded her that her intention in going to the meeting is not about the outcome of having him before the bill. Her intention in going into the meeting is to connect with the man, to connect with his feelings and his needs, to give him empathy, to listen at that deep heart level to his feelings and his needs, so that she understood her intention was pure connection and to let the outcome go. And then secondly, before walking into his office, to remember to get into coherence, to remember to do those three steps, because in walking into his office, if her heart is in coherence, then what she's doing at the level he wouldn't be aware of is that her heart, the electromagnetic field of her heart, is literally communicating with his electromagnetic field of his heart. So if she walks in with a coherent heart, her heart is going to be influencing his heart to become coherent. And so if his heart is coherent, her heart is coherent, and she gives him empathy, then they have maximum possibility for moving forward in some way.
So
that makes sense?
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense. So I'm trying to, so I put aside my outcome, my desire for an outcome. I get down in my heart and I start the breathing and the pulling together
appreciation, a feeling of appreciation,
and that transmutes, and I hold on to that. And I go in to meet with this man, and our hearts, the heartbeat, because it's so strong. I mean, that's somehow a connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the coherence of your heart. In other words, the coherence.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. The coherence of your heart. When you're in a positive feeling state, then your heart radiates that out, and this is something that we can see. You know. Through biofeedback. In other words, the Institute of Heart Math has created the M-Wave, which measures heart rate variability, which translates to measuring coherence. And so when you put an ear sensor on and you plug that ear sensor on to the laptop, then with their software program, you're able to see your coherence on the screen of the laptop. And if you are coherent, then on the screen you're going to see this nice, even rhythmic wave. If you're not coherent, and if your brain and your heart are not having a happy conversation, it's going to show up on the screen as a very erratic wave.
Okay.
So when you go into this meeting, if you're radiating that nice, even, rhythmic wave, his heart is going to pick that up. And then, like I said, you're there to listen and to guess, to respectfully guess. You know, in this practice, we don't ever analyze people. We don't try to fix people. We don't try to manipulate people. We simply are aiming to connect and put ourselves very efficiently in their shoes. So our method is to respectfully guess. So she would be guessing, you know, are you feeling hesitant because you really need reassurance that the government is still going to be efficient in adding this ministry? That was his issue, is he, you know, didn't want more bureaucracy. And so she, in guessing what he was feeling and needing, he felt hurt immediately.
Rita Marie, something you just said just dumbstruck me, gobsmacked me, or what have you. I have heard about the Costa Rica Department of Peace. Are you telling mm-hmm. me that you have been instrumental in that?
Well, yes. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I am so honored to have known you when you were a 17-year-old. That is amazing.
Thank you. Yes, because what happened after that meeting, when my Costa Rican friend, Alexander Kisling, met with this congressman, after she met with him, he agreed that he would also vote for it. And after 3 years of working on it, the bill passed. And it was initiated by my foundation. And so, yes, we made history.
Oh, my gosh. That's just totally amazing.
That's wonderful.
Totally.
So, Sharon, next time we go in a meeting, we're going to go in there with level vibes, right? That's what we call it in some corners. Leveling the vibe. I wanted to ask you, well, maybe we should take our break now because it's like 3 seconds, due in 3 seconds. So I'll hold on to that question now. Should we break now, Sharon?
That'd be great.
Okay. Please hang on, Rita. Marie mm-hmm. Johnson from Rasur Foundation in Costa Rica. You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Every Woman. Sharon Lockhart, your host, is here at the table. I'm Donna Wolf in the engineer's seat today for Ebony and Amy. And please stay tuned. We're having a wonderful conversation. We'll be back right after these messages.
This week, how to be a diplomat.
If there is a bombing at a nightclub in Bali, people come and ask me, why did that happen? Or can you explain it to us?
We'll meet one of the only Muslims in a tiny Iowa town who's become the local cultural ambassador.
I turned into this weird spokesman for the whole faith.
That's coming up on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
In the next Radioactive magazine, host David Mitchell interviews Missouri Representative Deb Lavender, District 90, St. Louis, Missouri, about the challenges posed by the threat to repeal the Affordable Care Act. It's all about Obamacare. That's Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Radioactive Magazine.
And we're back with Rita Marie Johnson of the Rasur Foundation. And you used to be located in Costa Rica, but you, I think, are headquartered in Gilroy, California now. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm loving my new life here in California. Yes, we are teaching the connection practice here, and we're headquarters for, really not just the United States. You know, we do have trainers in other countries, and one of the places that is really moving forward with the connection practice is Japan. We have a tremendous movement going on in Japan, so we have Japanese people coming here to the San Jose area. Gilroy's close to San Jose, and so we have people coming here to become certified as trainers. So the idea is to train as many trainers as we can to be able to, you know, make an impact by rippling out and getting lots of people trained.
How long does it take to become a trainer?
Well, it depends on what your professional background is, but if you already have training, like let's say you're a social worker or you're a teacher or, you know, you have some kind of professional background that has required a degree of social-emotional intelligence, that's really what this requires, is to have some background that has helped you to build your social-emotional intelligence, then we have an immersion course that is a five-day course where you can come and take the basic course, and then you learn to facilitate the activities within that course, and then you learn how to stand up and teach it, all within 5 days for a professional person. So you can actually come and learn it and learn how to teach it in 5 days.
So how did you get these programs accepted into the school systems there in California? What was that process like? Of course, it's
well, California. I haven't been successful yet in getting connection practice into California schools.
Okay.
No, but I can talk about Costa Rica.
Okay.
You know, in Costa Rica, we've impacted, we're guessing now. You know, I mean, we've trained about 1,600 teachers, and they keep teaching it continually each year, you know, and so we started 12 years ago. So it's hard to estimate how many students have actually been impacted by these teachers, because the teachers loved it. In our course in Costa Rica, the rating on all of the different elements of our course was like 98% and above on everything. So the Costa Rican teachers absolutely loved what we taught them. So we're confident that they are continuing to teach it. So we're guessing maybe 100,000 or more by now have been impacted by the connection practice. And actually, what helped me in Costa Rica was I had this woman, Alexandra Kissling, who was an influential Costa Rican, and she happened to know the Nobel Peace Prize laureate from Costa Rica, President Oscar Arias. And so she got me connected to President Arias when he was elected for another term during the time I was there. He had been president in the past, a long time ago, but then they reelected him. And so he and his administration supported us bringing the connection practice into the public school system. And then after President Arias, the first woman president of Costa Rica was elected, Laura Chinchilla. And I already knew Laura Chinchilla because I'd worked with her on the Ministry for Peace bill. And so she also gave her support. She and her administration gave her support to our program being in the public school system. So my answer to your question is, how do you get it in? Well, I wish I knew the answer to that for California and for the United States in general.
Yeah.
We're working on that. But basically, I had support from a high level, you know, somebody who got it, you know, and realized that this was something really powerful and efficient in the classroom. When we teach the connection practice, we teach it by skill building, but it's only 6 30-minute lessons, and in 6 lessons, the kids have the whole practice, and then they play it as a game each morning, and it only takes 10 minutes. So you spend 10 minutes each morning where the kids are partnered up, and in doing that, it releases the charge. If they have any negative feelings, the negative feelings get released, and you get coherence in the whole classroom so that you have the maximum possibility for learning, and so you're good to go. You know, you do this for 10 minutes, and you change the emotional environment in your classroom. So it's very powerful, very efficient, and it needs to be in every classroom.
And
you know, I'd like to gift this to every child in the world is what I'd like to do.
Well, I'd like to gift it to our president-elect. That's my personal opinion. That'd be a good start, talking about starting at the top.
Yes. Well, that's right. And so, you know, we're looking for ways to be heard. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we're working on right now is that my foundation is named for a Costa Rican poem called Razor. And in this poem, this teacher, this mysterious teacher, comes to the mountains of Costa Rica, and he calls all of the children into a mountain and begins to teach them about the empathy and insight in their hearts. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but the bottom line is, here we have a character named Razor from an 85-page epic Costa Rican poem. This is a story poem, and it is a vision of how life could be if we were able to live in connection. If we were able to actualize those great gifts of empathy and insight within us, we would be able to live in a much more harmonious, creative world. And so Razor basically changes that village where the children came from. He helps the children learn about it, and then the parents learn, and it changes their whole culture. And so this is a vision of how life can be. And right now what we're working on is finding a filmmaker who will create an animated character of Razor. And that way Razor as a character could teach this practice through entertainment. That's what our aim is. We want to get it out to the world through entertainment and actually have the character teaching the practice, but in a way that people get it, you know, like by osmosis, you could say, you know, by watching it and by being entertained by it, they learn something that is really very powerful and practical.
That's amazing, since so much, I mean, that seems to be such a powerful learning modality these days through video games and apps and things like that. So I think that would resonate well with a lot of people who, you know, are resistant to learning in other ways, it seems.
Mm-hmm. You got to go where the door is open, you know, the doors of people's minds and hearts. And so entertainment's always been a way, you know, to get into people's consciousness. And so that's one way that we are moving forward. We are looking for that right filmmaker to do that. But then, of course, the other part is training trainers. We're continually doing that, and not only training trainers, but we obviously offer courses to people from all walks of life. You know, we've taught kids that are 5 years old, and I think the oldest that I've taught personally was 93. So it works for people of all ages and from all walks of life.
And tell us again how our listeners can connect with the connection practice, with the teleseminar.
Sure. Well, they can go to our website, which is razurinternational.org, and Razur is R-A-S-U-R. A lot of people want to spell it with a Z, but there's no Z, just R-A-S-U-R, international.org. And there you can find not only information about the free teleseminar on January 21st, but you can also find courses in your area. We have trainers that are spread throughout the United States. Our strongest groups are in Texas, in the Dallas area, and in Washington, D.C. We also have some strong trainers in Washington State, and they're really sprinkled throughout the country. So at any rate, you can look on the website and find a course in your area, and you might have to travel a little ways. We don't have trainers in every city.
Well, I see one in Kansas City.
We have a good trainer in St.
Yeah.
Louis.
I see one in Kansas City.
So for those
City.
Of you in the Kansas City area, we do have an excellent trainer in St. Louis.
Well, she says there's one on Kansas City. She's online here.
Yeah, on your website. Barbara Hadley?
Oh, yes, Barbara Hadley. Now, Barbara is also a Unity minister.
Okay.
And so Barbara's been busy being a minister in the last few years and hasn't been active in offering courses, but she certainly is an excellent trainer. You know, I mean, she could be asked to produce a course, and I imagine that she'd be willing.
I started to say we could coerce her, but we don't coerce in this practice, do we?
Well, we could. No, we could
connect.
Just have that intention.
We could connect. Yeah, we could connect
right.
with her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Rita Marie Johnson of the Razur Foundation, Razur International, for sharing with us this practice, this connection practice. And I think Donna and I are going to intentionally set about connecting.
Connecting. Leveling our vibes and the vibes all around us, Sharon.
Yes.
We're on a mission.
We vow to do that.
We vow to do that.
Wonderful. You know, I would like to just go ahead and give my email, because if people want to write to me, I'm open to that. It's RitaMarie@RazurFoundation.org. It's a little different than our website, RitaMarie@RazurFoundation.org. I'd be happy to communicate with people.
Great. Thank you so much. And I tell you out there, do you still have those dimples? I haven't seen you in a long time.
I guess I do.
You probably do. You probably do. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, and we will be in touch with you again soon.
Sharon, thank you so much. And you too, Donna, for allowing me to be on your show. I appreciate being able to get our message out.
Thank you, Rita, for your positive, positive message. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Sharon.
I guess we need to promote the next upcoming show, which is Urban Connection with Donna Wolf.
Yes.
And after that, guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson?
Yep.
Who's your guest coming up next?
Well, Tony Schott is out there in the second on-air studio with our co-host, Joe Jackson. Joe has embarked on a series of programs about purchasing and owning real estate, how to buy a home, what are the steps you need to go through. So that's very, very valuable and critical information, because everybody doesn't know that and everybody doesn't have access to that information. So to serve our community, we want to bring that information to the fore.
Sounds good.
All right.
And we'll be back next week.
Who gave up their power?